It was this thought of taking refuge in her husband, her nearest, of trying on him the power of her craving for help, that spoke when she said in a clear, ringing voice, "I will not enter further upon your words, my friend, nor try by contending to refute them. It would be idle, for what you say is not to the point of our dispute. There is no need for you to say it. You need only speak the words, 'I will not,' for all the rest is but the cloak for your inflexible will. It is the iron firmness of your resolve, the granite determination which informs all you say. Should I, then, enter into unavailing and ungrateful strife, since after all, as a woman, I must rather admire and love your strength? It is rather something else for which I wait, something which, without that iron resolve, would mean little or nothing, but with it is rich and glorious. I mean your gracious granting of this boon for which I plead. This hour is not like other hours. It is for us two alone, and full of the expectancy in which I came to it, came to beg that your strong will should incline to me and give me my desire, saying, 'This offense shall be removed from the house, and Osarsef shall be deprived of his office, and sold, and sent away.' Shall I hear those words, my husband and lord?"
"You have heard, my dear, that you cannot hear them, not with the best of good will on my part. I cannot sell Osarsef and send him away. I cannot desire to. The will is lacking."
"You cannot will it? Then your will is your master, and not you master of your will?
My child, these are hair splittings. Is there a difference between me and my will, one being servant and the other master, and one lording it over the other? Master your own will, and will what is repugnant, what is entirely repulsive to yourself."
"I am ready to do so," said she, and flung back her head, "when higher things come into play, such as honor, pride, and the kingdom."
"But nothing of that sort is involved here," he replied. "Or rather, what is involved is respect for sound sense, the pride of wisdom, and the kingdom of moderation. Think not of these, Petipre," she begged in her ringing voice. "Think alone of this hour, this single hour, and its expectancy, and my coming to you unannounced to disturb your rest. Lo, I put my arms about your knee, and implore you to grant me this favor, my husband, and to send me away in peace."
"It is pleasant to me," he responded, "to feel your lovely arms about my knee. Yet, however pleasant, they cannot make me yield. It is but due to their softness that my reproach is so gentle for the disturbing of my repose and the heedlessness toward my well-being. For that you have no concern. Yet even so I will speak of it, and tell you something in this hour, when we are alone together." "Know, then," he said, with a certain mysterious solemnity, "that I must keep Osarsef, not alone for the good of the house, to which he gives such increase, or because he reads my books in praise of wisdom as no other can. For another reason he is supremely important to my well-being. In saying that he gives me a feeling of self-confidence, I do not say it all. It is even more indispensable than that. His mind is fertile in invention of easements of every sort. But of these, the chief is that by day and hour he speaks to me of myself in a favoring light, almost divine, and strengthens my heart in my own regard, so that I feel..."
"Let me wrestle with him," she said, holding his knee in a closer embrace. "Let me defeat him who only knows words to strengthen your heart and your confidence in yourself. I can do it better. I will give you power to strengthen your own heart in deeds, through yourself, in fulfilling the expectation of this hour and giving back the boy to the desert whence he came. For how greatly, my husband, will you feel yourself when you have consoled me and I go from you in peace?"
"Do you think so?" he asked, blinking. "Then
Hearken. I will command that when my steward Montcalm departs this life, for he is near his end, Osarsif shall not be head in his place, but another, perhaps Kamat, the scribe of the buffet. But Osarsif shall remain in the house.
She shook her head.
Therewith, my friend, is my need not served, nor will any increase of strength or knowledge come to you. For my wish would be but half or partly granted, and no satisfaction be given to my expectation. Osarsif must go from the house.
Then, said he quickly, if that is not enough, then I withdraw what I said, and the youth shall come to the headship of the house.
She relaxed her arms.
I hear your final word. Another, alas, I have not to give.
Then I will go, she breathed, and stood up.
Yes, he acquiesced. But after all, it was a charming hour. I will send presents after you to rejoice you. An ointment dish of ivory, carven with eyes and fish and mice.
She turned her back and moved toward the columned archway. There, for a moment, she paused, supporting one hand, still holding her garment's folds, upon a column, and leaning her forehead against it so that her face was shrouded. No one has ever known how it looked in that hidden face. Then she clapped her hands and went out. Threefold Exchange. With the recording of the above conversation, we have got so far into our story that we can now link it onto a remark which I made somewhat earlier and only in passing. I referred, that is, to the strange constellation, the pattern into which life's kaleidoscope here fell. I have said that about this time, when the mistress was making apparently sincere efforts to have Joseph removed, there came a change in the attitude of Dudu, the married dwarf. For whereas formerly his efforts had all been in the same direction, he now began to ply Joseph with sweet words, and to behave like his devoted friend, not only to Joseph himself, but also in conversation with the mistress, praising him in all possible keys. And in saying this, I said not a word too much. But the reason was that Dudu perceived Mut-em-Enet's state, and the ground of her desire to have Joseph put away from the sight of her eyes. He had divined it by virtue of the sun property of his dwarfish wisdom, a gift which, however surprisingly it sat upon him, he yet cultivated with assiduity. Actually, he was expert and connoisseur in the field, with sharpened senses for all its manifestations, though in other respects his dwarfish wisdom might sorely suffer from the gift. It was not long, then, before he saw what he had brought about, or at least fostered, by his patriotic indignation at Joseph's growth in the house. He saw it actually much sooner than she did herself, being guided by her proud, unself-consciousness, which would take no thought of the need for caution. Then, when her eyes were open, he profited by the usual incapacity of the deluded and stricken heart to conceal its state from the eyes of men. Dudu perceived that the mistress was on the verge of falling in love, headlong, calamitously, and with all the seriousness of her nature, with the foreign body-servant of her spouse. He rubbed his hands. He had not expected this, but shrewdly surmised that by its means a deeper pit would be digged for the interloper than could have been prepared for him in any other way. He changed his face from one day to the next, assuming a role which many people have played since his day, though he was himself scarcely the first to play it, being relatively late in time. Little as we know of his predecessors, we cannot doubt that he walked in the footsteps of others as he played his part. He began, that is, to instigate mischief by acting as go-between, to and fro between Joseph and Mut-em-Enet. In talk with her, he skillfully changed his tune, speaking tentatively at first, but more boldly as he felt more certain of the state of her heart. For now she sent for him, where before he had urged the matter upon her, and of her own accord began to discuss the affront to the household. At first he took this as a sign that he had won her over to his own hatred, and made her active in its service. but soon he scented a different posture of affairs in the strangeness of the language she used. "Steward," said she, to his joy she called him so, though in fact his office was an inferior one, "Steward, I have summoned you through one of the gatekeepers of the House of Women, to whom I sent one of my Nubian slaves, for I waited in vain for your appearance to continue our necessary conference in that affair which I so call, because it is an affair of yours, and it is you who have brought it to my attention. I would reproach you, though but gently, in consideration on the one hand of your merits, and on the other of your size, that you have not before now come to me of your own accord, but let me suffer torture by neglect. For waiting is in any case a torture, always unfitting to a woman of my station, and so for me even worse. My heart is on fire with this disgrace, this foreign youth, of whose name I have been obliged to take note, since I hear that he has become steward in the household in the place of the Osiris Montcalm, and walks in his beauty through the establishment, and oversees all, to the rapture of most of you. This shame, I say, burns in my heart, the which, dwarf, should rejoice yours, since you were the first to arouse me to it by your complaints, without which I might have rested in peace, whereas now it is before me day and night. And then, after making the thing a concern of mine, you came no more to speak with me of it, as is needful, but left me alone in my anger, until I was driven to send for you before my face to discuss what must be done, for nothing is more painful than to be left hanging in such a matter. This you should know of yourself, for what can you do alone, and without me as ally, against the object of our hate, he being so powerful that by comparison your hatred is impotent, however much I approve it? He sits unshakable in the favor of the master, who cannot abide you, and has known by means of cleverness and magic spells to make himself prized, also because his gods make all to succeed that is put into his hands. How can they do this? I cannot think them so powerful, certainly not here in the lands where they are strange and without honor, as to achieve all that he has achieved since he came amongst us. The gifts must lie in himself, for without them could no one rise from the base position of a chattel to the overseer of all the household. It is plain that you can compare with him in shrewdness as little as in outward favor, dwarf, for his wisdom and his way seem to appeal to everybody, little as you and I can understand the fact. They love him and seek his glance, not only the people of the house, but also in the city, and on the land and water ways. Yes, I have heard that when he appears, the women mount the housetops to stare down upon him and throw down their rings in token of their desire. This, then, is the height of the abomination. And for this reason, I was impatient to see you, steward, and hear your advice, or give you mine, to the end that this shameless situation be ended. For last night, when sleep fled my couch, I pondered whether we might not send archers with him to the city, who should shoot their arrows into the faces of these women, directly into their faces, who so conduct themselves. I considered, and found that we should do this thing. And now you are at last come, I charge you with it upon my responsibility. Yet you are not to name me in the business, but make it seem as though the idea were yours, and plume yourself with it. Only to Osarsif you will say that I, the mistress, would have it so, and have the bowmen shoot in the women's faces. And you must listen to what he says to this my order. Afterwards you will tell me what he said, coming of yourself, and at once, to make report, that I need not send and command your coming, having first suffered the torments of waiting, and the pain of being left alone in so weighty a matter. For it seems to me you have grown careless, steward, while I give myself trouble and pain for Amun. His Grace Becknekons, and you, have advised that I embrace the knees of my husband Petipre, captain of the king's bodyguard, and I have wrestled with him half the night for the ending of this annoyance, making myself a burden to him and a humiliation to myself, and all in vain, for his granite will was not broken, and I went forth alone and unconsoled, and messenger after messenger had I to send, only that you should come and make report of the infamous youth who grows rank in the house. How he spreads himself in the honors for which he has schemed,
and what he utters about masters and servants, but especially about me, its mistress, how he may chance to express himself about me. For if I am to meet him and oppose him, I must know him and his way of speech and thought about myself. Your negligence leaves me uninformed. You could, if you were active and ingenious, move him to approach me and seek my favor. Then might I test him and find out the magic by means of which he besots the hearts of men and draws them to his side. For that must be a mystery, and the ways of it past finding out. Or can you, O guardian of the robes, see and say what all the world sees in him? It is for this I have summoned you, for you know the ways of the world. Had you come sooner, I would have asked you before now. Is he then so unsurpassed in figure and stature? By no means. He is as many others are, in the measure of a man. Of course, not so small as you are, yet far from the towering height of my husband, Petipre. One might say he is of just the right height. But would that be so overwhelming? Or is he so strong that he can carry 5 bushels or more of seed corn out of the granary, amazing the men and bewitching the women? No, for his strength is but average. It is again just the right strength. If he bend his arm, the virile muscle stands out not grossly and boastfully, but only with moderate and graceful power, which one might call human, or one might also call divine. For so it is, my friend. But thousands of such are there in the world, and how little it justifies his triumphs. It is the head and face that impart meaning and dignity to a man, and let us admit in fairness that his eyes are lovely in their darkness beneath the arch of the brows, lovely in their clear, open gaze, and also when it pleases him to veil them in a dreamy and artful way which you have doubtless observed. But what sort of mouth has he that he can bewitch mankind, so that they actually call him, as I have heard, the mouth of the house? It is incomprehensible. It is not to be fathomed. For his lips are too thick, and the smile with which he knows how to grace them, with his teeth shining as they part, can but little explain the delusion, even considering the felicity of his words. I incline to the view that good part of the mystery lies in this same mouth. At that door must one listen, would one trap the adventurer in his own snare. If my servants will not betray me, or leave me to wait in torment for their aid, I will take it on myself to ensnare him, and bring him to a fall. But if he resist me, know then, dwarf, that I will order the bowmen to turn their weapons and shoot their arrows into his face, into the night of his eyes, and the fatal sweetness of his mouth,